Okay, so I'm in the truck with Nick. We are on the way to Chattanooga, Tennessee, the first weekend of our clinic, and we really started getting on a roll. We were kind of talking about how Kaylin from Dirtastic just signed this deal with Fly for her event, and it kind of got us thinking about like how we each have our own partnerships with USWE for Nick, and then myself is partnered with Hermoto for gear, and we were kind of talking about that, and it circled around to, we were talking about like the SXS guy, the skid plate maker, and how he reached out to me about my sponsorship content, and he really wanted to get the book because he really wants to help people in motorsports, and that started a conversation kind of about, we watched the movie Major League last night, and there's a character, I don't know, Nick was on a roll, and I told him to pause so that we could catch the roll. You wanna reinsert your roll here?
What the... You're talking about the like how to promote yourself or
yeah, just like being a character, you know, you were
oh yeah, the point I was making was that the character in Major League, the guy who steals all the bases, Wesley Snipes' character, he's portrayed as one of the better players in the league, but he's on a team that is full of misfits and all this stuff. But like halfway through the movie or more, they start picking up steam and they start doing better, and then they end up doing an infomercial for themselves. And I thought it was interesting since me and you have talked about sponsorship stuff so much. Like look at how they did that infomercial. Like he slides in and he says like, don't steal home without your American Express or whatever, and just the smile and the look on his face, he's like this funny kind of character that you kind of can't help but just think he's funny or something, but then at the same time he's like this great player that kind of helps them take their game to the next level. So on top of being just talented, he's also brings like a storyline, like what's he gonna do this time. Like he just is this kind of unpredictable funny character. So I guess what I was gonna relate that to was my experience as a teenager racing dirt bikes. And not being the most social guy at the track, when me and my dad went to the track all the time, it was always about, we're there to race. We're not there to, as a social event. We're not there to try to become everybody's friend. We're there to go try to do the best we can and focus on racing. And I think if you're good enough, I think that is a route that you should definitely consider. And don't be ashamed of that route, because that's what I did and that's what a lot of people did, and I became good and a lot of other people became a lot better with that same mentality. But my point is that people in the industry want to sell their products. A dealership wants to sell dirt bikes. So I had this other kid that I was rivals with, one of my biggest rivals back in Minnesota. As I got into like 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, we seemed like we were always battling. And I think overall, I would have to say, I probably beat him more times than he beat me. I felt I was the better rider at the end of the day. That was my mindset back then. So in my mind, I assumed that I should get sponsorships and discounts on bikes and all this stuff. And when we went to talk to a dealership that was actually like 15 minutes down the road from where I lived, we talked to them about getting bikes at cost or something, like what kind of deal can you give us on bikes, or can you borrow us a bike for the year or whatever. So they had a demo bike there, a brand new Kawasaki 250F. This is in 2004 when they first came out with the 254 strokes, and me and my dad wanted to get a four stroke and a new bike and this and that, and we talked to them, and it was like they considered it when we first went and talked to them. But then a couple weeks went by and we didn't hear anything, and then all of a sudden that kid that I was rivals with, who actually lived like 2 or 3 hours away from that dealership as opposed to me like living 10-15 minutes down the road, I was technically their local rider, they gave that demo bike to this other kid, his name was also Nick. They gave the bike to him to borrow for the year. And I remember just being like, so baffled by that as a kid. I'm like, I don't understand what happened and what, because I thought I was faster, putting up better results. So to go along with Catherine's kind of ideology of like, you know, it's not just about being the best rider. And sometimes it is, though. Like, there is a time where, like, if you're truly the best, like, you're going to just go places. But if you're just simply beating everybody all the time, like, and you don't have a good personality, like, you're still going to do good things. But at the end of the day, companies want to sell products. So even if you are really, really good, you're going to service those companies and dealerships much better by being a little bit more social. And that's the factor that Nick Jackson had, this other kid that I raced. So, you know, he was able to go pretty darn fast and be a social bug and seemed like he was friends with everybody. And I looked at it sort of like, he's not serious. And maybe in the long run, things didn't necessarily go good for him, just like I didn't necessarily make it as a pro either. But it's just an interesting point, you know, that you need to provide either a group of people or something that basically sells product. And it doesn't always mean just telling people to buy something or telling people that, you know, buy this product because it's what I use, because they gave it to me for free. It's more about like what kind of person you are. People are going to latch on to that part of your personality, and you don't even need to say that you ride for Dunlop tires. They're going to find out just by seeing the sticker on your bike or looking at your bike, and they're going to want to be like you or whoever else is like that. So it's a fine line for the serious racer guys, and especially if you're under a financial crunch all the time, like it's really tough to want to be that social guy. But the world's becoming more and more like that, so you're potentially missing out on opportunities if you don't give a little bit of that, you know.
Well, and to kind of circle back, I guess, with the Major League movie that we watched last night, one of the things I noticed, the more you were kind of talking about he's kind of this funny guy and you don't really know what he's going to do, that last game that we played, the whole team, right, all of a sudden they brought the crowd back. That was part of the whole deal, is they didn't have enough crowds, so the owner of the team had a deal where they could back out and move the team, and she was going to get like a condo in Florida or whatever if they could drop the viewership. So if they lost audiences, and then the baseball team found out what the owner was doing, and they really made it a point to grow their fan base in subtle ways, right? They really pulled a lot of tricks out of strange places in how they won the games. And those like very oddball moves that they did brought a lot of fan base back, because a lot of them were like, well, what are they going to do next? Like, you didn't know what they were going to do, and they kept doing crazier and crazier stuff. Like that very last game with Wesley Snipes was like psyching out the pitcher. You know, you would like basically walk out halfway between two bases and sit there and do like the stupid little dance, the little twitches in the knees, and like jog his feet back and forth, and was like antagonizing the pitcher. So the pitcher kept staring at him, trying to like figure out if he was going to get him out or throw the ball. So that psyched out the pitcher. But then the last move that they did, the guy who went up to bat called his shot, which they said in the movie nobody's done that since Babe Ruth. So that was like this big like, oh my god, he called the shot, you know. It was like this big monumental moment. They had the horns were blaring and the music, they like built up this whole scene. The angles were really cool in the movie. They were like, he's calling his shot, and the crowd was going freaking wild while Wesley Snipes was doing this stupid little dance antagonizing the pitcher. So it's like the psychological game that the audience gets to watch, like what's going to happen next. So then the pitcher messes up his throw or whatever, so they reset and they do the whole thing again. Wesley Snipes is doing his stupid little dance, and the batter called his shot or whatever, and so the pitcher throws the ball and he bunts it. It was a psychological warfare kind of game, and it was completely for show. The whole thing was 100% a show. And that I thought was really cool, because it adds to the character of like each individual person and the team as a whole. It was a show instead of, I mean, it was a competition, but they knew how to put it together in a really clever way.
Yeah. And that is cool, but a lot of people might wonder how does that relate to me in motocross, for example, or me in like riding a dirt bike, or you know, how do I get sponsored and stuff like that? That is a sort of the mystery for a lot of people.
Yeah, I guess when it comes to like putting on a show in races, it really comes down to like, I want to say your attitude and your love for what you're doing kind of creates that show for you. You don't have to plan it. You don't have to think about it. It just kind of happens. I don't know about you and your experience in motocross, but for me, when I was road racing, for me, it was like the love of the battle for first. I didn't like when I had a 20-second lead in any of my races. I didn't like that. I loved it when I had competition, when there was somebody to play with, and you didn't know. You, as the racer, had no idea who was going to win, and that itself was kind of like part of the show,
yeah,
if you will. And it was like how each person thinks, and it's like understanding the process of how everything comes together, and that, I think, develops in each other's riding styles, too. So style comes into play with show, and people are like, I don't know what's going to happen. We can speculate. We can think on it. And I feel like it's that speculation. If you have the certainty of like Marc Marquez, you know, where he's lapping fifth place, you know Marc Marquez is going to win before the race even starts. As long as he doesn't crash out, then it's like nobody even watches him. They would put a little camera in the corner of the TV screen with Marc's camera, and then they would focus on third through fifth. The battle for third through fifth. Nobody cared about Marc Marquez anymore because he just won. So it's more so like, where is the show? Are you the show?
Yeah, and it's tough, I think, because a lot of families that are in racing, you have lots of different personalities and lots of different financial backgrounds, mm-hmm. and lots of different, just everybody's different no matter what. And so some kids, like take a Ryan Villopoto or a Ryan Dungey, that they're from my era of motocross racing. Like, it seemed like all of us, not to put myself with those guys, but it seemed like all of us in that era, our dads were very hardcore. Like, it was all about racing. Go there to win. It's not there. We're not there to be buddy buddies with people. And you know, it's interesting because like, those guys made that work for them because they had to, and they didn't get hurt. There was a lot of things that played into them having a really successful career and making a lot of money, and most of it came down to they were so dominant. But then you have guys like Davey Millsaps and Trey Kinnard, and you know, maybe like a Jason Anderson or Justin Barcia. These guys that are almost more marketable in a lot of ways because of their personality.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of those guys came from financially tough backgrounds too. So there's a difference in personality, and you know, I don't think it's wrong necessarily that a guy like Ryan Villopoto may have been more serious all the time and didn't, or Eli Tomac, that doesn't say anything about his personal life, or he's not cracking jokes when he loses and stuff. You know, it's pretty darn serious most of the time. And there's something to be said for those guys, and their dedication and their passion and how serious they are. And there's something to be said, like I think Eli Tomac just mentioned too, like Hunter Lawrence and Jet Lawrence do the donut thing. So it's like a way to get more interactive with the fans, and they're getting more involved, and they're marketing themselves in a more broad way than Tomac did just through the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But like Tomac mentioned too, how long can you sustain being able to deal with the fans, deal with the sponsors, and do your racing and be serious? And how many years can you win? So it is a fine balance. It's tough because you want to be serious enough and not have too much on your plate.
Yeah.
But it's tough, you know. Like, I think back to like Davey Millsaps when he was on. I remember him before he turned pro, and he was, and I was really young, but I remember he was in a lot of motocross, amateur motocross videos that they were making back in the day before the internet was really you know, before we had Instagram and before we had a lot of videos. And every video that you saw of Davey, they always made it seem like he was this fun-loving, smile-on-his-face type of guy. And it was similar with, like, Trey Kinnard and other riders, too. But you know, behind the scenes, there was a lot of stressful stuff going on as well. You know, whether it was trouble, like, you know, tough family life, tough financial, like, living in a motorhome or whatever it was. But they portrayed him as this fun-loving, like, cool, marketable kid, where there was other kids that were relatively, like, on his level riding-wise, but didn't take off with their career for different reasons, I guess. But I just think there's something to be said for kind of putting a smile on your face whenever you can, and remember that the sport should be fun. It shouldn't be so crucial that it's, you know, when it's time to go racing, yes, it's like, it's life or death. You got to do it the best you possibly can. But at the same time, it's entertainment. It is entertainment. Motocross is entertainment. And so, you know, you got to be able to put on some kind of a show. Like, yeah. Aaron Plessinger, he does a good job. You know, he puts a lot of heart out there on the track, even though he might not be the most naturally talented guy. You know, or his style might not be the most efficient compared to, like, Jet Lawrence or something, but he's very marketable, and he's, who knows how much more money he's making through other sponsors that sort of like his personality, as opposed to him just winning and being dominant. Mm-hmm. Because winning and being dominant, like, people forget no matter what. Like, if you win today and you're a hero, but, like, if you lose for the next four races in a row, you know, everyone kind of forgets about the fact that you won, you know? So it's definitely tough, but I don't know how that plays into, like, sponsorship. Like, what do you think the importance of being a character is versus being a serious racer? Like, I come from the serious racer background, where it's very, very important to kind of not be a clown necessarily.
it's interesting, because we've had this conversation a lot, but for me personally, like, when I went to the racetrack, when I did race, I did stay by myself. I always slept in my own camper. I never was out past dark, because nothing good happens after dark at the racetrack. I was always sober at the racetracks. I never had drinks or any of that stuff when I was out there. I did my first, like, year, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. I did not like waking up and feeling hungover and having to go road race motorcycles at 120 miles per hour. It was not fun. It wasn't entertaining. Like, I didn't like the people that were out there. And so I hunkered down and I was way more serious, but that didn't mean that during the day I wasn't walking through the pits and I wasn't saying hi to everyone. And I wasn't, like, bikes were being torn apart. Somebody would come over and say, "Catherine, you've got really small hands. I need you to help me, like, put this bolt in behind this radiator. We can't drop the radiators," or whatever. You know, like, people still knew who I was. I was still involved in the club. Thursday night, so I would show up Thursday night, I would help with registration, and that was a way to meet all of the racers and say hi to everyone and participate in the club that I was with. But it still allowed me all day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, to do what I was gonna do. And then from, like, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. was my quote-unquote social hour. Racing was done, but it wasn't time for bed yet. And that was when we could go around and be like, "Hey, that was really cool. Like, good race," you know, instead of hanging around with the people with the boom box going and all of that jazz. It was like 5 to 7. We were having, like, just walking around and seeing who was still at the track, you know? And when it comes to, like, winning versus don't, in my experience, nothing changed when I won. And that's not to say that winning doesn't get you places. I mean, again, look at Mark Marquez. He's, like, the highest paid salary person in the world, but fans don't care anymore. I mean, he's got a loyal fan base. I remember people were praying at the track when Mark Marquez crashed. It was just a really gentle low side. He got right back up, and the whole place was like, "Oh my God, Mark Marquez is down, no!" You know, it was this whole big production. So, like, he has a loyal fan base. It's true, but In my opinion, I've had a lot of people tell me when I did have sponsorships with companies, it's like, oh, you only tell me good things because they pay you, or you only tell me good things about them because they give you a discount, or you get free product from them, whatever, whatever, whatever. And the second I stopped with the whole, like, yeah, I win and I got sponsored, like, the second I stopped focusing on race results or any of that jazz, and really started focusing on, like, helping somebody, like, my story always started off with helping Angel. That's where it all started. I met Angel. Angel really needed just, like, help riding her dirt bike, so I started helping her riding her dirt bike. And then I started thinking, like, I just learned something. I should probably post this on social media so Angel can see it. And then that built me a whole fan base of people like Angel. And that's how I find sponsors that help me help people like Angel. So that's why I like working with Hermoto is so important to me. That's why working with Stratia Skincare is so important to me, is because those are brands that I can use to help people like Angel. And that comes from having a character instead of winning. Because for me, I like racing. I do. I like racing, but I don't like following a series. And I don't like being so dedicated and absorbed in racing that it's the only thing I can think about. So for me, I can't rely on race results to be my paycheck, because what happens if I'm injured? What happens if I can't make a race series? What happens if gas prices go up and I can't afford to travel anymore? And then I lose all of my paychecks because I can't keep the race results up. So that's where being a character comes into play for me. If you can't be a character, then like what we talk about doesn't necessarily apply very well. Like if you're like what you were talking about as a kid, where it's racing only, then you should go that route. And there are other people that can help with that. I'm not very well versed in how to use your numbers as leverage to sign things, but I am really well versed in how to use your character to find partners.
Well, this kind of plays into the fact that the world is different now than it was. Where so maybe a kid like me back 15 years ago when I was racing motocross, things may have been different if we would have had social media and I would have been there and take a video of me for every race and every hole shot that I pulled. Look, this is the kid who pulls every hole shot.
Yeah.
And I would have maybe become famous on Instagram or something. Like what is the importance of social media now compared to when we didn't have it kind of before your time?
It's got give and take, you know?
It has advantages, doesn't it?
It does, absolutely. It has huge advantages. You can reach larger audiences than you could have ever reached before. You can help more people than you could ever help before. And most importantly, you can start your own income revenues outside of racing without the help of sponsors too. Like, that's how we started the clinics, was through social media, honestly. And then the sponsors came after the idea of starting the clinics, but the clinic idea came from the people on social media first. So absolutely, I think social media is incredibly important, but I don't think you need the numbers that people think they do. Like,
okay.
Like, Angel got... Somebody messaged me, I forget who it was, but somebody messaged me and said, this person said that they'll only sponsor me if I have 100,000 followers. Something crazy like that. And it's like, okay, you know they're not the sponsor for you. That doesn't mean that somebody else isn't willing to pay you. I've been paid $2,000 for 10 people, to host 10 people in an in-person event. Like, it's not about how many people you have on social media, it's the quality of the people who follow you and what their affection for you is.
Right. Their connection to you is really important, because yes, they're gonna, that if you have a quality fan or a follower, that they just look up to you.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to try to support you potentially. There's a better chance of them supporting you over somebody that they're not a fan of.
Yes.
And they're going to generally support the products. But so what responsibility is it of you now to make sure that you're being honest about, like, products and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. And then what would you also say to somebody who, like, what advice would you give to people now about social media and, like, how to approach it to help get a following if they don't, but they have... And if they are an interesting person, Is it just start posting stuff about yourself because you're interesting enough on your own. Don't try to reach and be somebody else. Like, look to yourself for.
Yeah, no, definitely be yourself. Don't be fake. 100% don't be fake, because people know when you're fake, and that sucks. Because I did a campaign once on social media. If you scroll far enough back, you'll see it, and it's really embarrassing, and I hate it a lot on my feed. But I used to think that in order to get sponsored as a girl, I had to post bikini pictures on my bike. And that is a thing that's on my social media somewhere. I meant to go delete it, but every time I go to delete it, I get an error message. But I felt awful doing it. I felt truly terrible. And you know me, and you know that that's definitely not who I am. I definitely don't post, like, bikini pictures, right, or sports bra pictures or whatever, like, look, I'm a girl on a bike. Like,
well, it only goes so far.
Yeah. Right? It only goes so far, and it dissuades the people I actually want to be around. It attracts people I don't like. Like, when I do that, like, it attracts those weird people who are like, oh my God, a girl like you, if I had a body like that, I would never do anything to hurt it. Like, these are real comments I get. Like, I guess we should just let her get away with it because she's a girl. Girls like that can never ride dirt bikes, whatever. Like, those aren't the people I want around me. I want the people, when I post a video of me doing something dumb and laughing at the end of it, I want people that are like, wow, I really wish that I could have more fun on my dirt bike like that. It's like, cool, let me show you how. Like, let me show you how to have more fun on your dirt bike like that.
Yeah.
Like, or when I post something and other people are like, yes, like, this is what I needed to hear. This was so inspirational. Thank you for posting this. Like, you don't get that by being fake. You have to be yourself to find the right people that will resonate with your audience. And by resonating with your audience is going to like your sponsors, because you pick your sponsors for the best interest of your audience, basically, by being yourself. I always say, like, I worked with a couple of people. Like, Jake Rayberger ran a youth program called the Jack's a Spade program. It's a kids flat track team. But the guy is a total punk. He had the dyed mohawk, just like the kid from Cobra Kai, like the full foot tall spiked mohawk, shaved head, arm tats with the cut off sleeve shirts and the freaking Viper shades. The dude was like full metal punk. And he's like, Catherine, I can't get sponsors for the team. Like, nobody takes me seriously. And I can't put on a suit and tie. Like, I can't hide my hair or my tattoos or any of that stuff. And I'm like, Jake, stop hiding it. Like, the whole brand, it's a really cool brand. It's like this black and white deco art is their brand logo with all of the really cool, it's like Louisiana inspired, New Orleans inspired art, you know? Yeah. It's this really cool grunge brand, and it's badass because it's a kids racing team,
yeah,
for flat track at the Flying Dutchman. Like, it's so cool. And he's trying to go to banks and car dealerships and places like that. It's like, Jake, you need to be going to tattoo parlors. You need to be going to Liquid Death. You need to be going to, like, these cool punk brands.
Right,
like,
right.
Stop trying to talk to people who don't like your image.
Right.
Stop going to, like, super conservative people. It's not going to go well. Or I had another gentleman. His name is Jesse Cameron. And one of the questions he had when I had this exact conversation with him was, but Catherine, who's going to sponsor some old guy who's a total penny pincher, rides a bike from 2001 and doesn't buy anything new ever? And I was like, well, if your bike is out of production, do you have to go to a CNC shop? Do you have to go get custom part fabricators? What about motorcycle museums? What about, like, vintage collectors? There's so many brands. You got to start thinking beyond, like, don't think inside the box. That's what got us in this spot in the first place, where brands and motorsports can't support us anymore. We have to start thinking outside of the seven brands that everybody reaches out to, like, and start thinking about who you are and who is the person you want to help. Like, and it doesn't have to be help, like, you don't have to sell a product, you don't have to change the world, you don't have to end world hunger, none of that stuff. Like, Nick, you make videos giving tips and tricks. Who is the person you're trying to help?
Oh, that's a good question. You know? Oh, I don't know. I think the way I look at it when I do little tips and tricks, I mean, I think just about anybody could take something from it. I know I see, me personally, this is just my philosophy, but when I see other people ride that I don't even think, maybe I think I'm better than them overall as a rider, let's just say that, and there's still things that I learn from people that I don't even, I might think I'm technically faster than or something like that, but I see them do certain things and I say, wow, that's, I'm not doing it like that, and he had a lot of success with that. So I'm of the mindset that I'll take information anywhere I can get it, and I'll take any help I can get anytime I can get it.
Okay, but who is watching your reels? Who's the person that watches your reels?
I mean, dirt bike riders.
But where are they in their skill level?
I mean, I think anywhere from, you know, kind of just getting into like off-road and enduro riding to people that are pretty good even. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the top pro guys. These guys are so experienced, but again, I see things from people that I don't think are completely amazing riders all the time, but they're doing interesting things.
So would you say that the person that you're trying to talk to are dirt bike riders who are eager to learn just more about what they're doing, and want to, and as you say, they love the basics.
Well, okay, so one of my inspirations, a lot of where my tips come from, are either things that I stumble upon that are working really well for me, or it's because I see a lot of other riders doing a certain mistake, or I can see the way certain riders think about things or how they're looking at a certain obstacle, and that is where I get inspired to want to maybe talk about one little thing that could get them to look at it differently, as opposed to like some videos are very, very comprehensive, like talk about every single movement involved. I guess I'm talking to the people who are missing that one little link, whether it's on wheelies, if you're just simply afraid to hit your rear brake, well, okay, that's why I made a video on slamming your rear brake. Just slam your rear brake. Quit worrying about being gentle with it or finessing it. Just bring your front end up, slam your brake, and bring it back down, and just realize what that does for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's probably a lot of people that could benefit from that.
Yeah.
A lot of people that ride motorcycles, not even dirt bikes. So, that's where my inspiration comes from. It's other people that I see riding. A lot of times it's my friends, like my vet rider group of buddies that I go out and ride with, that they've been riding their whole life, but they just haven't really analyzed what's going wrong every time they get hung up on a log or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, it's because of where you put your weight, it's where, you know, it's this angle you hit it at, all these different things, the way you let the clutch out, all this stuff. But maybe I'll try and find like one or two little things that would instantly make them have, you know, success the next time they do it.
So each one of your riders is inspired by somebody that you saw riding.
Each one of my tips or something?
Yeah, is inspired by somebody or something that you did that like past you wouldn't have known you had done. So it was helpful for you. Like, it's a helpful thing that you think would help people get to where you're at today.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different things, right? There's the way we practice. So it's, I don't know. It's tricky because there's like so many different avenues in our mind that we can go down to like to get better. So, and it's different for each person where they're at and stuff. So I don't know. Honestly, it's sort of mysterious for me. I just do the things that come into my head very clearly. I don't try to talk about the things that, like, look, okay, there's a subject that I know I want to talk about, but the whole process and the whole image of how it goes down isn't 100% clear to me with words and in a way that I can explain it that I'm inspired by too. Like, when I make a video, it always has to be something that, like, was a really great epiphany for me as well.
Mm-hmm. That you want to share.
Yeah, I want to share it because it's like, look, it's just like the stop high siding thing. I did a video on high siding where you know, if you tip away from the hill and your bike goes falling really far down the hill, like, I learned, you know, you let the clutch out and pop, you know, give it some gas and let the clutch out, pop the clutch and get the rear wheel to break loose so that you don't high side. Like, that one did really well. And I didn't think it was that even great of a video, but apparently it's something that really clicked for a lot of people. They're like, oh shit, I do high side a lot. So it's fine. I try to look for stuff like that because there's already so many other guys explaining every little detail of how to do a maneuver.
Cool. So I want to hone in on that. So you had a problem. The problem was, like, you were high siding a lot. And then as you were high siding a lot, you stumbled upon, I don't know how you found it, but you found it out that if you give it a blip of throttle, the rear tire slides down, catches, and basically stops you from high siding.
Yeah.
And you said, holy cow, I need to share this thing that I found out. The problem was I was high siding. I figured out how to stop high siding. Now I want to share the solution to that problem. So I want to highlight that. Did you change the world with making a single reel? Did you change the world?
Slightly.
Did you end world hunger?
Almost.
Did birds come flying out, and is it going to be something that's written on your tombstone when you die?
I guess not.
So, and that's the thing, but it's just something as simple as that that gets people's trust, right? It's something as simple as that that makes people go, holy cow, I want to listen to what else this guy has to say. Like, what else does he have? I bet you after that video, at least 1% of the people who watched that video went through your profile looking for other reels that you've made.
Sure, yep.
And some of those people might have checked out your YouTube channel. Some of those people might have found your coaching schedule off of that. And some of those people might have seen some of the people that support you and help you make those videos as well.
Yeah.
So and that's where that building that audience and trust and loyalty comes from. So when you're posting to social media, okay, this is coming around full circle. When you're posting to social media, I always say, you want to share your story, and people are like, I don't know what my story is. I'm just a regular old Joe. I do nothing crazy. It's like all of us at one point in time had a problem, and we worked through that problem, had an epiphany about the problem, and now we can help other people with that same problem. That is what you should be sharing on your social media, whether it's large scale macro or small scale micro. So in your case, you share micro epiphanies, right? Your social media is not one big storyline. Your social media is every day you have a different story to tell, a different problem to solve, a different person you talk to. For me, I have one overarching story. I guess I have like three overarching stories that get told at different times between training, between the business, how the business is doing, and between being a girl. It's changed a lot. Now it's become, first it was like just a road racer turning into a dirt biker and figuring out, like, solving problems within, like, how do I become a better dirt biker based off of road racing. And now it's turned into I'm a female athlete who just came off of a bunch of hormones and am trying to figure out what it means to be an athlete as a woman, like, dealing with your cycle at the same time. And not just, like, I'm not just talking about menstruation, but, like, we have fluctuations and temperature changes and our endurance performance levels change. And there's so much that happens inside of that that I'm still trying to figure out, and I'm not an expert on that either. So it's like, as I figure out tiny things, as I learn more stuff, as I figure out things like, we burn fat better in the last week. Or
in other words, you have a thirst for knowledge and a passion for kind of trying to figure that stuff out.
Yep.
Whereas somebody else might not have the time to do that.
Yep.
Or whatever, and so, you're able to share that.
Yes. Yep. And on that topic, there's another podcast out there where I say, like, with that, one of the problems that comes from my story, at least, is, like, I had really bad breakouts. You saw the breakouts that I was having for a while. They were getting really bad. I don't have the time, money, effort, or energy in order to invest in trying to figure out what skincare I should be using, what's going on with my face. I don't have the time, effort, energy, or money to do that. But you know who does? A skincare brand. So I asked a skincare brand. I was like, hey, I did a poll. My audience is the same as me. They're all trying to figure out how to be women in sports, but they can't train because if they train a lot, then they start breaking out. Can you help us with this? And a brand will be like, I would love to help you solve a problem with our products and then tell the world about it. And that's why I think being a character is important when it comes to sponsorship over just winning. Does that make sense?
Totally, it does make sense. But let's go back for a second and just... because you're kind of, in a way... there's more than two worlds of thought, I guess, in a, you know, ways of looking at it. But, like, in a way, you're not necessarily a racer, even though you're going to race and you've done races and all that stuff. You're not, your focus isn't necessarily racing. You're just a person out in the world that rides dirt bikes and has an Instagram profile or Facebook profile, and you have followers and you've developed a relationship with that, those followers.
Yep.
So it wouldn't necessarily matter if you had, if you raced or you didn't race.
Correct.
It's all about the character.
Yes.
And so that's, you would sort of almost relate it to like a Billy Bolt or something like that, who's sort of at the top of his sport, but he's not so much like a Tristan Hart or a Manny Lettenbickler where they're sharing every little part of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the advantage? There's obviously advantages and disadvantages there. Like maybe there's a focus thing. Maybe focus for racing might be affected slightly when you're vlogging all the time. Like, but you're so entertaining and you don't mind that lifestyle that like Billy, he just does that. Whereas a Tristan Hart or Manny or whatever, they're a little bit more like purist. That's in a way, I guess you could say. Not to say that Billy isn't a purist dirt bike rider, because he is, but he somehow has a different capacity for expressing his character and just being a character, which he doesn't seem like he has to try necessarily. It's just easy for him because that's who he is.
Yeah. So here's my thing on that. I think I'm a character. I don't mean to show gloat, but I personally think I'm a character, and everybody knows when Catherine walks in a room. It's just a thing. Everybody knows when I've shown up.
Yeah.
But I am terrible at documenting things. I am truly atrocious at it. And it hasn't been until I posted up on social media. I was like, hey, I'm really trying to do this thing. Like, I really need some help. Like, is anybody interested in really cheap photography or videography? You know, I'm talking like $100 a month kind of deal, you know? And you'll get hobbyists who are just excited to be shown around a race that just would love to take video of you, whatever. And then at the end of the day, you just collect all that video, go home, do some editing over your lunch break at work, whatever. That's fine. And I heard a quote. I'm gonna botch it because I don't remember the quote word for word, but it went something along the lines of, you either experience things or you document things. You can't do both. Like you can either experience the race, run the race, or you can document the race. You can't have a camera documenting the race while you're racing. That's why GoPros were such a cool thing. Is because that was like the first time you could do that. But I don't have the capacity to remember to, like, hit the button, turn the camera on, turn the camera off, put in a new battery in, do battery swaps. Like,
it's too much to think about while you're wanting to race and do an extreme activity where you have to focus.
Yeah, I just can't. Like, I can't. So I built my empire off of volunteers. And I say empire very loosely. I've only got 6,000 followers. So, like, it's not really an empire. But, but like, everything I do is 100% volunteer. I have one friend that I helped once with her dirt biking, and she's become obsessed with the process, and she moved out here. She like gave up everything to move out here to help us document everything we're doing, and it's amazing, and she's not getting paid for it. Like, it's crazy. And that's the power of like having something being real and talking to specific people, because then people love you so much that they seriously want to give up everything they've ever known to help you make the thing a reality. It's crazy to think about.
Yeah.
It's absolutely bonkers.
That just shows the passion that is very, no matter what you're doing, if you have a real passion for something, people appreciate that. Mm-hmm. They appreciate the musician that's willing to get up there and pour his guts out and take a chance and do something that's never been done before. And then you have that experience that you experienced it together.
Yeah.
If you're, or if you go to a motocross race and some guy does some big jump that no one else did, you were there and you saw it. And now you're connected. You're like, that guy, man, that guy. Mm-hmm. And it was there. That's that entertainment value. And just the passion and love that you have is very powerful. I guess it goes without saying, but being able to tap into that as a person who's trying to sort of play the game of making money in motorsports or whatever you're doing, because it doesn't have to be motorsport. It could be like knitting.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's someone on Instagram that is just killing it with knitting. Some knitting products company is like paying somebody to say something, or it's dog food or whatever. But yeah, it's now let's say one more thing, because it's kind of getting long here.
Okay.
What would you say to the introvert guy who really it doesn't like all the stuff, but maybe kind of knows that they need to share themselves a little bit more in order to like maybe keep their factory ride or whatever it is, like how does that person sort of, because that person also has an interesting style and approach too, like him being serious and whoever it is, like, and only focused on being focused on racing and stuff, there's sort of an interesting story there that creates those people too.
Yeah,
how can they, so would that be one of those instances where, hey, bring your buddy who is your best buddy that always wants to go riding with you. I'm sure he'd be happy to take his camera out because he looks up to you and take a video of you, even if you're not some amazing Billy Bolt character, but you're documenting your progression and maybe even talking about it.
In my experience, every introvert always has an extroverted friend that tends to help if you have them around. And like with Angel, in Angel's specific case, Angel's my videographer. She remembers way more often than I do to whip the phone out, and I'll catch her like pointing the phone at me. People don't know this, but I actually like I'm a little camera shy still. And I'll see her pointing the phone at me, and I'll like try and slink out of the frame. And she's like, no, Catherine, what's going on? Like, tell us what's happening. And it's going to suck. The first, like, our fungi reality TV show is terrible. It's really bad because we don't know what to do.
Just getting going.
Yeah, I can't look at the camera. Like, I can't make eye contact with the camera. I can't say the right words. Who cares? I say in the video multiple times, I'm like, nobody's watching the first episode anyway.
Truly, yeah.
One of these days, this will be funny when I learn how to video edit. Like, it's just, be real, like, be legit. Understand that the first 20 videos you're gonna make, you're gonna get one or two views, maybe, and it's probably gonna be your mom.
Yeah.
Like, and that's okay. The second I accepted that, I was like, well, this is fine. And then by video 20, you'll actually be kind of comfortable with the camera. But as far as being an introverted person trying to get the connections going, building an audience, one of the things that I've seen really good success with for introverts is creating events that invite people to you so you don't have to leave your space. So like in the example that I've seen really well is like for the serious racer, I had a father-son combo. They were very serious, like batten down the hatches. We're only here to race. We only work on stuff. We don't want people in our space kind of deal. They had a s'mores night, a family s'mores night, where they love the family atmosphere, they love the racetrack and all that stuff, but they still want to be in bed by 8 o'clock, whatever. So they hang out with other people who are just like them. Everybody goes to bed at 8 o'clock, but they want all the kids to hang out. So they wanted to partner with Solo Stove to build, like, two or three fire rings together where the families could come together, everybody could have s'mores and hang out for a couple hours and then go about their ways. But they got to stay in their area, their space. They didn't have to leave their pit area. So if one of them had to work on the bike, they didn't have to go anywhere. They could still work on the stuff and be tucked away out of the shadow. But everybody was there because of them, you know, be like, oh, go over to Jason's pit. They're having s'mores, but Jason doesn't have to be there. You know, that kind of deal. So that's a good way to get traffic and start building a connection with the community without, like, forcing anything. The extroverts will come to you, and then the extroverts will just do extrovert things, and you get to just sit there in the sidelines and maybe give a quick quip if you want, and you don't want to be involved.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's, I think that would, to me, in a lot of serious racers' minds, they might think that's pretty abstract.
Yeah, I believe that.
But...
I mean, yeah, it's hard. Abstract how? Like, dig farther into that. You're the serious racer, so tell me how that's whack.
Oh, I don't... I mean, it just... It's tough. I don't know. It's tough. I know when I was a kid, when I was racing, and maybe it's because I didn't do it at all, but it always seemed to me that if I was up hanging out with kids that I was, like, sometimes you would run into kids that you were racing against.
Yeah.
Walking the track the night before the race.
Mm-hmm.
We'd walk, you know, before nightfall. We'd go out with our dad or our best buddy or whatever, maybe some younger kids or something that you don't race with. And you all have your little cliques of buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually, you know, usually the two best guys aren't, you know, buddy-buddy in motocross.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me, it was always sort of distracting to hear words from other racers and hear words from other racers' friends. And I, for example, I remember being at the motocross track one time and a kid's like, yeah, this so-and-so is going to be here tomorrow. He's going to kick everyone's ass. And he was the kid that I was racing against. And I remember it sort of distracted me and it sort of made me not fall asleep as easy that night.
Yeah.
And... me and that kid ended up having a really good battle. It was one of my best battles ever in motocross. But I just remember sort of feeling kind of guilty, like I shouldn't have been out talking to anybody. Like I should have kept to myself and not like heard any noise. And like I think most racers can relate to that, like that are really, really serious about racing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not so much in like hard enduro and enduro there or like trials, but like motocross and supercross. And maybe more in like road racing too, where when you start to get up into the serious, more serious ranks, it becomes a little bit more fine-tuned. Your focus has to become a little bit more fine-tuned, so that is kind of tricky to deal with. And
yeah.
Nowadays you have social media, and it's just even trickier in some ways, because you could sit there and look at your phone before you go to bed and like see something that might keep you awake, like, who knows, your competition... that one really fast kid's going to show up or whatever. I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
It can just be tricky.
Yeah. I guess you could always go for things outside of racing as well. You know, you could... outside of the racetrack. Kevin...
Like riding events?
No. I mean, you could be a coach. That's like the most easy... That's the easiest track for a lot of people is being a coach. But consider like... who you're helping, why you're helping, what's the story you're telling, right? So outside of racing, Kevin Horney's always a good example because he's really competitive at the racetrack. He's very, like, focused and forward, but he knows how to socialize at the track, but none of his activations are actually at the track. All of his activations are outside. He works with the police department to do training. He works with the high school to speak to other troubled youths, quote-unquote, about like making good decisions, basically. So you can always partner with people outside of the track too. If there's ways to bring your audience to other places, then you should consider retail stores. Like if you say, hey, I'm doing autographs here, like that's a good way to get foot traffic if you're that kind of person. Or like, I'm doing a deal, here's something. I tried to do a deal with Hermoto, it didn't work, but not for the fault of the idea. They really liked the idea, but for the fault of the practicality of the idea that I had, like the timeline wasn't going to work. That's on nobody except for my own fault. But what I wanted to do was a collaboration line. I brought to them the idea. I was like, hey, I want to do a fundraiser for the TKO event. And I have this jersey that I've always dreamed about printing. And you have the design, the manufacturer, you have everything it takes to make the jersey I've always been dreaming about. And you guys haven't had like a big press event yet. So what if we did a collaboration where we make a special edition, like, TKO Challenge jersey, and I'll split the cost to make it with you. I'll go 50-50 on the cost of manufacturing with you, and then we split the profits 50-50 back. And that will get you all of the press and like forward motion and momentum and eyeballs coming off of this challenge if it actually goes well. If it really does well. And that's a good example of like it required no attention of my own outside of like while I'm racing TKO, I don't have to think about it. It's already done, it's over with. Like that would have been something that I would have had to deal with up until like 2 months before, and then it wouldn't be in my hands anymore. Okay. Then I could focus solely on training.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there's different ways to go about it, different things to consider. So yeah.
That's cool.
I guess on that note, maybe we should end the car chat, huh?
Yeah.
This has been Travel Chats with Catherine and Nick. Oh, we gotta tell a dad joke. Do you have a dad joke? I don't have a dad joke. No. It's the rule. You have to tell a dad joke. You have to tell a dad joke. Oh. Cool, it's still going. You have to tell it. What's the dad joke? Come on, dad joke.
I don't know jokes. I don't get jokes either. They need to be explained to me, like, five times before I get them. And then I laugh, but I don't get jokes.
Oh, my reception is really bad. No!
What?
I'm trying to pull up dad jokes for you. Ba-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum. Hey, where do pirates buy hooks? The second-hand store. Did you get that one?
Not necessarily.
Get it? Because it's a pirate and he lost his hand, so he's got to go buy a hook, but he gets it from the second-hand store because it would be his second hand. Because he lost his first hand.
Oh, okay.
So now he needs another one. So he's got to go to the second-hand store. All right, on that note. Bye, everyone. Gotta say bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.